The Elijah G Podcast Network continues to grow. We've launched Emmy Lily, a podcast for pop culture, politics, and some of the different things that are happening in the world that aren't always covered. We also have the Game Day Cube NHL show, the Game Day Cube NBA show, the Game Day Cube MLB show, and now this new podcast, the Game Day Cube NFL show. As always, there's always the Game Day Cube sports experience hosted by yours truly, Isaac E. We will be doing bi-weekly podcasts going forward with the Game Day Cube sports experience. And this new podcast, the Game Day Cube NFL show, will be normally a weekly podcast until during the season. And since training camp starts this week, this podcast will be on multiple times during the week, all the way up to the Super Bowl, with different insight and breakdowns of what's going on in the league, including divisional breakdowns for every single division, which is what the first 8 podcasts are going to be for the Game Day Cube NFL show. So again, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Game Day Cube, and keep track of all of the podcasts that are part of the Elijah G Podcast Network at elijahg.com/podcasts. That's elijahg.com/podcasts to find the full list of podcasts as part of the Elijah G Podcast Network. Now, let's get to the show. The Game Day Cube AFC North NFL preview is, in my opinion, the most comprehensive breakdown of each division that you'll find anywhere. And I hope that you subscribe to this new podcast as we break down all 8 divisions and really do a lot of in-depth conversation and coverage on the NFL, something that you won't find anywhere else. Again, this is the most comprehensive breakdown from not only teams, but fantasy, and also in regards to chalk and betting and where these teams fall. And I will also give my own little tidbits and predictions on where I think things are going to land in regards to these teams record-wise and how best to be successful at the sports books if you are one of those people that are inclined to do those kind of things. All right, let's get right to it. We're going to go in alphabetical order. Now, the Baltimore Ravens come into the season after losing in the playoffs to the Los Angeles Chargers at home in the AFC wildcard game. Now, the Ravens played a very good game in the second half. They didn't play a very good game in the first half when they fell behind with the help of the Los Angeles Chargers field goal kicker putting them behind by field goals before Baltimore started getting themselves into the game. But they were unable to come all the way back, although they had the ball late with a chance to have an unbelievable comeback in that playoff game, as they kind of let Lamar Jackson just let him loose, so to speak, late in that game, basically saying, hey, we have nothing to lose, let's just go for it. And they almost were able to pull it off. Now they come into this season with more expectations. Lamar Jackson's in his second season. He's expected to improve at the quarterback position. And part of that hope was the fact that they moved on from Marty Mullenweg as offensive coordinator. Greg Roman comes in as offensive coordinator. Greg Roman's best years was working with Colin Kaepernick, a similar type hybrid quarterback that can hurt you with his legs, but also has a very strong arm and her ability to get the ball down the field through the passing game, but people may question his ability to read a complicated scheme on the back end in regards to secondaries, much like what people question with Lamar Jackson. And that's basically the biggest question coming in to the season for the Ravens, is whether Lamar Jackson can be successful as an NFL quarterback now that teams have a year of tape on him, that they studied him, now that they know some of these running plays that might be coming, or quick draws, or sweeps, bootlegs, where the play is looks like it's a pass, but it's basically a designed run. Will Baltimore get away from doing a lot of more running plays and then try to go more into the passing game? All this plays a factor. Now, they brought in Mark Ingram at running back. He is an upgrade over what they had with Buck Allen and Ty Montgomery, who they got from Green Bay in a midseason trade. Ingram is going to be relied on to be the featured back, to take a lot of more pressure off of the shoulders of Lamar Jackson, much like what Frank Gore did for Colin Kaepernick in those few years that Kaepernick was a quarterback, especially the midseason switchover from Alex Smith and then the playoff run to the Super Bowl, which came a fourth down short against the Baltimore Ravens. On that end, the wide receiver position, they bring in Seth Roberts, they lose John Brown and Michael Crabtree in free agency. So in that regard, I feel like they bring in Michael Floyd too from Washington. I feel like they kind of pushed at wide receiver. I'm not sure they got better or worse. It might have gotten slightly worse if you look at it, because Crabtree and Brown are a little bit more proven commodities than Seth Roberts and Michael Floyd. On the cornerback front, they bring in Justin Bethel from Atlanta. They didn't lose anybody, so they improved there in the secondary, and they get Shane Ray from Denver, very solid linebacker, but a downgrade from C.J. Mosley, who nothing against Shane Ray, but C.J. Mosley is a much more proven commodity and an all-pro linebacker. Terrell Suggs is finally no longer with Baltimore as well, the veteran, so... And they've also moved on from Eric Weddle on that back end. So they lose a lot of veteran leadership, but they also get younger, which I thought they needed to do. But the defense may not be as good as it has been in the past. They also, with the big move of going with Lamar Jackson, they move Joe Flacco, moves on. So he is now in Denver. And the Ravens are now all in with Lamar Jackson. We can go to Joe Flacco this year if it doesn't work out. So they put all their chips on the table. Now, I love the draft pick of Marquise Brown. That is the cousin of the aforementioned Antonio Brown. He has very similar speed, fairly similar hands, a little smaller though, but can really take the roof off of defense. Baltimore is going to be looking to play fast, play a new way of football, a new wave of football, the kind of similar stuff that you saw with what the Rams played, the Chiefs played this year. But again, a lot of pressure on Lamar Jackson. Jalen Ferguson comes in as an edge rusher in the third round. Is not a replacement for Terrell Suggs, but hopefully they can get some of the same productivity from him. I like to pick a Miles Boykin late in the third round at wide receiver. He's a big body receiver, possession receiver. Can really help a Lamar Jackson who may struggle at times with his accuracy. It's always good to have a big body wide receiver. I also like they picked Justice Hill late in the mid fourth round, running back of Oklahoma State. I think he will come in and be the number two running back behind Mark Ingram. So I also love that addition as well. They are projected to win 8.5 this season. And the big question is, can they get there? Now, last year, they got to 9. And that is where that is the big challenge is always to get to 9 or 10 to make the playoffs. I'm not completely convinced yet they can get there, but we'll talk more about where things land for each division team after I go through the actual each team and go through the breakdown of what happened in their offseason. Also, closing, the Ravens longtime GM Ozzie Newsome is retired, stepped down. So they now will go with a new general manager, and they will, I guess everything now after this moment is the franchise after the Ozzie Newsome era, which is basically the franchise after the Cleveland Browns era, because Ozzie Newsome was one of the last big holdovers of the Cleveland Brown era, the Cleveland Brown regime, as you know, Armadale sold the team to Biscotti before Biscotti now owns the team. Armadale is long passed away. And Ozzie Newsome was a holdover of that. Remember, Hall of Fame player, played for the Cleveland Browns for many years. Now that he's gone, this now feels like this is the Baltimore Ravens, and any residual legacy of the old Cleveland Browns is now over. So now we'll see where the franchise as a whole goes forward into the next decade, century, etc. As far as fantasy prospects are concerned, Mark Ingram, RB2, would be a nice addition. I think Lamar Jackson, QB2, mainly because of what he can bring with his legs, is also an exhibition. I know personally, in fantasy, I love if my second quarterback is dual threat, which can allow him the ability to run and pass, because those kind of players can really provide a lot of benefit, especially when they're not necessarily having the great day passing the ball, but still can provide you points with their legs. In deeper leagues, if you have to start two quarterbacks, it's always good to have a passing quarterback and a hybrid / running quarterback. That has always been successful for me. In every league that I've had that, I know in fantasy that I have made the playoffs with every time with a team like that. So that's what I always seek out. So as a QB2, I think he's a great option. If your league only starts one quarterback, he's still a great option to be used in situations of bye weeks. A good scenario in fantasy is to know whoever you want as your QB1, whether that's, you know, Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes, et cetera, know when their buys are, and then know where the other buys are of good QB2 option quarterbacks are. So when you're draft, you're not hunting around, oh boy, I need a second quarterback, who am I going to pick? If you have a strategy in your draft, you're going to be well off in picking players in fantasy. So I think QB2 is a good spot for Lamar Jackson. I think RB2 is a good spot for Mark Ingram. I don't think you're going to get a lot of value from the wide receivers position from Baltimore's end. I think that your best option for Baltimore is tight end. And again, I think you should look at tight end two for the tight end. But if you are a picker that likes to pick your tight end really, really late, you might be able to find the Baltimore tight end in a situation where you get the Baltimore tight end one. But the way I think the fantasy drafts are going to lay out, I think the Baltimore tight end one will be a high, shall I say, a highly regarded option. And in this case, it's Nick Boyle will be a highly regarded option and may go higher than, say, somewhere in before the first 10 rounds, which then puts a lot of pressure on you finding another tight end later if you were looking at a Baltimore tight end. But one of the things that I'm banking on is Nick Boyle isn't a household name. And because Nick Boyle is not a household name, he should go past into the double-digit rounds of a fantasy draft. Therefore, you can draft a more comparable tight end one earlier in the draft and then come back, whether that's like a Zach Ertz type of Philadelphia, that kind of player at tight end one, and then you can get your Nick Boyle at tight end two because Nick Boyle will get a lot of targets in this offense. So that's something to think about on the fantasy end. The Bengals moved on from Marvin Lewis as head coach, who had been there since 2003. So now they start a new era with Zach Taylor, who comes over from the LA Rams. He is expected to hopefully make their offense a little bit more dynamic in the upcoming season. On the offensive line, the Bengals have moved on from Andre Smith, Clint Boiling, and Cedric Ogbahi. They bring in John Miller, who was a disappointed appointment in Buffalo as a guard on their offensive line. They moved on from Jake Fisher, who was tackled and tried to move to tight end. Tyler Croft signed with Buffalo as a tight end position. They have now moved on from Vontaze Burfict. The longtime linebacker for the Bengals, Vincent Ray, is also no longer part of this team. They bring in B.W. Webb from the Giants at corner, and Kerry Wynn also from the Giants comes over on the defensive line. In the draft, they get Jonah Williams at tackle, which should help shore up their tackle position in the near future. But Jonah Williams also has an injury, and he is not expected to play this season, which is a devastating loss for the Bengals, as he's out with a labrum issue. So they will now have to fall back on Cordy Glenn, who came over in a trade with the Bills last season, as Cordy Glenn was going to move to right tackle, but now we'll have to stay at the left tackle position. They bring in a Drew Sample. They drafted him at tight end out of Washington, be more of a pass receiving tight end. Jermaine Pratt, a linebacker, NC State, was also picked in the third round. They drafted Ryan Finley, who had a lot of big days at quarterback at NC State. Give them maybe some options, picking him in the fourth round. Maybe he can mature into something. Or if this season goes completely haywire, they'll probably just end up picking a quarterback high next year and moving on from Andy Dalton, as this might be the last year Andy Dalton is a quarterback at Cincinnati Bengals, so some pressure is on him to succeed and be successful. Andy Dalton needs to stay healthy. That's one thing, but there is talent on this team. A.J. Green and Tyler Boyd and John Ross, that trio of wide receivers is maybe one of the best trios you're going to find out there. I mean, Tyler Boyd is very, very good. Could be number one wide receiver in a lot of different places. And AJ Green is AJ Green. He's all pro. They can hit you with Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard at the running back position. And they still have Tyler Eifert at tight end, who, when healthy, is also all pro. I worry about the offensive line, and the defense didn't improve. It actually got worse from a defense that really didn't help them much last year. They are projected in most books to get the line, or win total line, is at 6 for Cincinnati. From a fantasy's perspective, I never been a big Andy Dalton person on fantasy football, so I'd probably stay clear of him. He's not good enough to be a QB1. And as I mentioned earlier, what I like in my QB2, in deeper leagues where you have to have three quarterbacks, he is a option late in a late round pick, maybe your third quarterback pick, so he can be a backup in that scenario in two QB leagues. Other than that, he's not somebody I'm like putting a flyer on. However, I do have to not disregard the fact that he has a ton of weapons around him. And because of that, he's always somebody that you have to actually look at. But again, I'd rather have a running option at QB2. And in a two quarterback league, it's sensible to have him as your third quarterback that you can match up and play him and start him in matchups that favor the Bengals this season in their schedule. Joe Mixon is a adequate RB2 option. AJ Green is, mainly because of my distrust for Andy Dalton, and AJ Green's had some health issues in recent years, I'd have to put him at wide receiver 2. I think Tyler Boyd might have more upside at wide receiver 2 in some drafts. So a lot of people will gravitate to AJ Green early because he's a big name. I wouldn't pick AJ Green anywhere higher than the 5th round. He'll probably be gone on most draft boards then. Let somebody else fall for that, because you have to think about the quarterback that's throwing to AJ Green. And no offense to Andy Dalton, that's not somebody you would pick in the 4th round or higher, AJ Green. But a lot of people will, because he's AJ Green. Where you can get Tyler Boyd in the middle rounds, 5-10, much better value. That's where my pick would be at wide receiver 2 over AJ Green. I just pass up on him. And Tyler Eifert is kind of a stay away in very, very deep leagues. Sure, you can stash him. Hopefully he stays healthy. But you don't want to get caught picking him and he's not going to stay healthy, or after this recent injury, he's not the same player. It would be a wasted pick, considering most drafts are going to, mainly because of his name and his potential, he will go, I say, somewhere between 7 and 9, and in most drafts, he'll be gone. But again, I just think that there's better value out there. And I wouldn't go in that area, so to speak, if I was thinking about a tight end in fantasy. The Cleveland Browns go into the season with new head coach Freddie Kitchens. He has brought in Todd Monken to coach the offense, and former Arizona head coach Steve Wilks to coach the defense. A lot of expectations are for Cleveland. They are the darling pick by a lot of people to win the AFC North and contend in the AFC and possibly go deep into January. A lot of pressure falls on Baker Mayfield because of that. This is the second season with Baker Mayfield. Saw a lot of great things. You saw all the talent that he sports, and the height isn't really a factor, mainly because Baker has always played with, he's as tall as he's going to be. And I think the height thing, yes, you'd rather have your quarterback 6'6", 6'4", 6'5", but it's kind of overrated because if you can play, you can play. And Drew Brees has proven that. Even Doug Flutie for the years when he was in Buffalo proved that. Height, is it? Russell Wilson is 5'10". So throw that height thing out the window. Baker Mayfield has the talent and the tools to be a all-pro quarterback in this league for many, many years to come. And they helped him by putting even more talent around him than he probably could have ever imagined going forward. And it's very exciting times for the Cleveland Browns as they actually have probably more hype around this team and in roster since I'd probably say the late 80s. Now that I know they made the playoffs in 94 in one of Belichick's seasons in Cleveland. But I've not heard this kind of buzz around the Cleveland Browns since the late 80s. There is definitely a thought that this team is going to be very, very good. But I do worry about their depth at defense. And I worry about their chemistry and how this is all going to work out. They get Odell Beckham in the trade from the Giants. Now they can team up Beckham and Landry outside at wide receiver, at least for the next 2 years or so before they're going to have to pay Baker Mayfield and they're not going to have the ability to have all this money tied up at two wide receivers. Kareem Hunt comes in. He will serve his 8-game suspension. And after he's done serving the suspension, he will be in for Cleveland as a weapon. I do love Chubb, and I think with Chubb, Hunt, that gives them, and then you have Johnson as your third running back. That gives you a lot of dynamic ability in the backfield. They get Eric Kush and Brian Whitman from Chicago to help strengthen their offensive line. They bring in Demetrius Harris from the Kansas City Chiefs. And they have moved on from Emmanuel Ogba on the defensive line. He's gone. Tyrod Taylor is gone as a backup quarterback. Jamie Collins is gone at linebacker. So they've shuffled a few names around and out. And in the draft, they brought in Greedy Williams at corner, a talented ball-hawking cornerback that can help. I think an upgrade from Joe Burrow Peppers, mainly because Jarrell Peppers was kind of where do you put him. Greedy Williams, you can really put him at one of the cornerback positions, pencil him in, should really help Cleveland there. You have the draft pick of Sheldrick Redwine, also at safety from Miami. You got him in the fourth round, help again in that secondary, where they could improve, where they need to improve there. This is a good team. This is a team that can really do a lot of damage, I think, in AFC this season, at least on paper, but it all has to come together. And again, it's all about how Baker Mayfield continues to grow at the quarterback position. As far as fantasy is concerned, I like Baker Mayfield as QB2. I like Odell Beckham as a wide receiver 2. I like Jarvis Landry as a wide receiver 2. I don't like them as ones because there's not enough balls to go around. Remember, you also have, they also have the running backs that he can throw out of the backfield. They got Njoku at tight end, which I think is a talented tight end as well. And any other season, I'd like Njoku at tight end 1, but I'm going to put him at tight end 2. Again, just not enough balls to go around, but definitely on my short list of people of players that I'd like to draft our backup Landry and Njoku all. I think we'll be able to do a lot of damage this year in this offense. I like Antonio Callaway as a wide receiver 3. If it was me and I struck out at Beckham and Landry in fantasy early, where those two guys might be gone by the 5th or 6th round at worst, they might be gone by the 4th round. Callaway would still be sitting there later, somewhere between 8 and 12. I think he's worth a flyer, especially if Beckham or Landry get hurt. Remember, Beckham's dealt with some injuries in the past. Callaway would be a good guy to pencil in there and have him at death, especially in deeper leagues. Callaway is a good player to draft and stash on your team in keeper leagues as well, because, again, they can afford Beckham and Landry right now because they haven't had to pay Baker Mayfield or Nick Chubb. They're going to have to pay both of those guys down the road, and therefore, cap reasons, they're not going to be able to keep both Beckham and Landry, but they can have them for now and see how this works for a couple years, and then most likely one or both of them will move on to someplace else and continue their second part of their careers, or basically their prime years probably won't be in Cleveland, but they can really put on a show over the next couple years here in Cleveland and make a lot of money for themselves in free agency down the road. So that's where Cleveland stands in regards to what's going on with their team going forward this season. Mayfield, if he was with Kitchens the entire season last year, remember, Kitchens was the offensive coordinator last season, he would have thrown for over 4,500 yards and 38 touchdowns. So that gives you an idea. And that was without Odell Beckham. So that gives you an idea of how explosive the Cleveland Browns offense could be this season. The drama of Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell is finally out of Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown is now in Oakland. Le'Veon Bell is now in New York with the Jets. So the Steelers can now turn the page off of all of those distractions and then try to focus on the upcoming season. So that's the main storyline with Pittsburgh. They brought in Steve Nelson at corner from Kansas City. Dante Moncrief comes in at wide receiver. And Mark Barron comes in at linebacker from the Rams. They finally replace Shazier by getting a similar type linebacker in Devin Bush in the first round of the draft. They then get Deontay Johnson, wide receiver out of Toledo, which has a lot of upside in being a star wide receiver going forward in this league. They also drafted Justin Lane in the 3rd round at corner. I love the pick of Benny Snell in the 4th round. I think they got a lot of good value there. Snell will play, will get a lot of touches and be able to play Snell and Connor. I think they will not miss. Well, Le'Veon Bell is a unique player, and I don't think you cannot not miss Le'Veon Bell. But they've definitely softened the blow of not having Le'Veon Bell. And now they're 2 years without him. I think they know how to play without having Le'Veon Bell as part of that group. As far as fantasy is concerned, I like wide receiver 1. I like Juju Smith-Schuster. I think you can get him somewhere between 3 and 6. I think he provides a lot of good value. I think you want to roll the dice and maybe you'll get him at 5th or 6th. I think he's a solid wide receiver 1. I think he's your best option at wide receiver 2. Fantasy drafts are weird. It depends how they roll and play out. But I definitely would pick Juju Smith-Schuster. I think James Conner can give you a lot of value at RB2. I think he is definitely a value, a super value at RB3. I think Ben Roethlisberger gives you more value in deeper leagues as a QB3. I think he is not a QB1 anymore, in my opinion, and I don't see him as a solid QB2 because of the fact that he doesn't provide anything other than his arm ability and his ability to score with his arm and not his legs. So for me, he's more of a QB3 option, and that's what I would do if I was picking in a fantasy in a deeper league. I'd put him at QB3, especially in a two quarterback league. The Steelers are expected to, by most books, they have them at 8 at 9 wins. So we'll see if they're able to get to that spot. As far as your betting angle for all four teams, here's some things that you need to keep in mind. The Ravens have not finished under their regular season win total in the last 5 years. Cincinnati, and remember, the Ravens line win total line this year is 8.5. Cincinnati has not gotten over their projected regular season win total in the last 3 seasons, and unlikely to do it again this season. Cleveland suffered 4 losses last season by 1 to 3 points. And their roster definitely improved in the offseason. The Steelers went under the regular season win total for the first time since 2013. And a lot of the big reasons for that was turnovers. Roethlisberger's got to be better with the ball. He's got to be smarter with the ball. Now, when you look at the Ravens, their regular season projection right now is 8.5. And for me, I just don't think the Ravens improved enough this season. In fact, I can make the argument the Ravens have basically just plateaued in regards to what they brought in, what they lost over the offseason. The Ravens' first 6 games are against losing teams last year that changed head coaches. And this is the first time since 2006. Neither Baltimore and Pittsburgh will play in prime time, mainly because of the Cleveland Browns factor. The Browns has got more play in AFC North. The Ravens will play 6 teams that had double-digit losses in 2018. That is very beneficial for Baltimore. But the big question is Lamar Jackson. Can Lamar Jackson become more of a complete quarterback and prevent teams from loading up defensively and stopping his run game and stopping Baltimore's running game? So what I try to do is have more of a comprehensive thought process on just trying to find out where wins and losses are going to fall. When you look at Baltimore last year, they won 10 games. The 3 games they lost 3 games in division. They lost 1 game in conference outside of division. And they lost 2 games out of conference. The 2 games out of conference were to New Orleans and Carolina. New Orleans obviously was a playoff team. The Chiefs were a playoff team. They lost to the Steelers, the Browns, and the Bengals in division. None of those teams made the playoffs, but Baltimore did as a lone representative out of the division. If you start with division and you look at the fact that they lost three in division, one to Cleveland, one to Cincinnati, one to Pittsburgh, I don't see that improving those three losses. I can see maybe they beat the Bengals one time this year, but I think we could accurately say that the Ravens probably will be somewhere between 4 to 2 wins in the division. Okay, so then after you do that, you think about what outside division are they playing? They lost to New Orleans and Carolina out of division last year. They have the NFC West this year, Arizona, the LA Rams, the Seattle Seahawks, and the San Francisco 49ers. Arizona and San Francisco are at home. You have to like Baltimore in those games. You don't like them at LA, and you don't like them at Seattle. I think there is a push. Again, they're looking at two losses out of conference. So then you go into the other division that they're playing, which is the AFC East. They're playing Buffalo, New York, Miami, and New England. And that is where Baltimore season will be won or lost. Because if I put 5 losses on them already before they, and now we have these 4 games plus their 2 conference likes, which their 2 conference likes this year happen to be the Houston Texans. That is one like, and they played them midseason at home, and then they play at Kansas City on the road. So that's 2 very tough games. Hard to think they're going to win both of those games. That's another loss. So that gives you 6 losses. Now you have New England, Miami, Buffalo, and New York. I think that's 2 losses there. So for me, I think Baltimore will be at best 8 wins. And that's best case scenario. And because of that, they're over unders at 8.5. I'd have to go under if I was picking the line against Baltimore. I'm picking under 8.5, which I guess for some people that's probably difficult to believe. I guess some Baltimore Ravens fans might try to write me and say, what are you, crazy? The Baltimore Ravens made the playoffs last year. We have Lamar Jackson. You know how good Lamar Jackson is? Yeah, I know how good Lamar Jackson is. But I have to be realistic about the situation. The over is minus 122. So you can get the under at a good price under the juice. You probably can get it at plus 100. And that sells me under all day Baltimore under 8.5. When you look at the Bengals, who are at 6 wins, that is their projected win total going into the 2019 season. The Bengals, well, we should go back at least first. The Bengals won 6 wins last year. And when you look at their wins, they came against Baltimore in division. They came against Indianapolis and Miami and Oakland in conference. And then they came against Atlanta and Tampa Bay out of conference. Now, Atlanta, Tampa Bay, Indianapolis, Miami, Oakland, none of those teams made the playoffs. Their one lone win was against the Ravens that did make the playoffs. So you have to keep that in mind going in to 2019. And we look at their schedule. They have their division mates, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. I can't say they got better or worse. I guess they might have gotten slightly worse on the defensive side of the ball. And then you're looking at the fact that they did beat Baltimore, but they didn't beat anybody else in the division. I can't really expect them with Cleveland's improvement. Maybe they beat Pittsburgh in a game. Maybe they beat Baltimore in a game. Let's just say we give them 2 wins, just to be nice. We'll give them 2 wins in division. Now, out of division, they have Seattle, San Francisco, Arizona, and the Rams. from that group, they get San Francisco at home, and they get Arizona at home. So they got two of the easier teams at home. So say, let's say we give them one win there. Then interdivision, Buffalo, New York, Miami, and New England. When you look at that, you say best case scenario to get two. That gets them to five. Now we have our likes. At Oakland, later in the season, where Oakland should be better as the season goes along. And the other like is Jacksonville at home. I think six is a good job by Vegas. I think that is very accurate. I think that is probably where they're going to land. I don't see them getting to seven. So I think picking the under at six is far more logical in the situation. The big thing with picking the under at six is that you're getting, you probably get it at plus 110. So you're actually getting money on it. And basically, if it goes six, you get pushed anyways and you walk away with your money. So I think that they'll probably be at six. But if you're going to pick it, I'd probably pick the under. Now, let's move over to Cleveland. Cleveland is sitting at nine wins for the season. That is, again, minus 130 is where Westgate has it. The Browns are 1-28 straight up and 2-27 against the spread in their last 29 games, in which they are minus in net turnovers. I think a lot of that's probably because the team wasn't very good. I guess that does play into it. The Browns last season, again, had the tie on their record and finished with a record of 7-8-1. So about a 500 team. They tied Pittsburgh. They beat Baltimore. They beat Cincinnati twice. So that got them to 3-2-1 in the division. And they almost beat Baltimore late in the season. They were 4-2 down the stretch late in the season, losing to Baltimore and Houston, two teams that made the playoffs. So that kind of gives you a little bit of idea of what they were capable of doing last year, how much better they were in the second half of the season, especially after getting beat up by the Chiefs in early November. They really turned it around and became a team of reckoning, going 5-2 down the stretch and 4-2 after that bye. If you look at division-wise, Pittsburgh, they should at least beat once. Baltimore, they should at least split, and I think they have the Bengals' number right now. So I'd have them at four wins in division at the worst. Outside of conference last year, they lost at Tampa. In overtime, and then lost a very close game at New Orleans, inconspicuously lost at Tampa. They were able to then go on and beat Carolina and Atlanta at home later in the season when they started playing better. And then conference, they lost at Oakland, and they lost to the Chargers badly, and Chargers beat them pretty badly at home, and they lost to Kansas City pretty badly at home. Remember, the Chargers and Kansas City both won 12-plus games, and then Oakland game they lost was an overtime game. So another thing to keep in mind, that they lost a lot of close games. The 7-8-1 record is very misleading. They probably were better. They probably were one of the six best teams in the AFC as the season ended. But they got off to such a rough start, they just couldn't rebuild back from that. So in interdivision, the Bengals, or excuse me, the Browns, I don't know who keeps saying the Browns, Bengals, the Browns play the AFC East like the rest of the division. New England, Miami, the Jets, and Buffalo. Worst case scenario, they only get two there. So that puts them at two. Two plus the four in division, that gives you six. Out of division, they played NFC West. Arizona, late in the season at Arizona. They have the Rams at home early in a big game on Sunday Night Football on national TV. They got Seattle at home, so they get the two toughest teams in that division at home. And then they travel out at San Francisco on a Monday night game. I'm going to say worst case scenario, they get eight there. That gets them two more. That gets you to eight wins total. So then that puts it down to interconference. At Denver in November. And the other interconference game that the Bengals play is the first game of the season, Tennessee at home. I like them over Tennessee. I think at Denver is the only one that you have to question. Could they win it? Could they not? Either way, you're at nine already. The line is at nine. This smells over. I like Cleveland over nine. So I would pick Cleveland over nine if I was putting any odds or predictions on it. Now, the Steelers, pivoting quickly. The Steelers last year, it all fell apart late, as we all know. They are predicted to be at 9 this season. They do not have Antonio Brown anymore, so they don't have that kind of explosion on offense, but they still have Juju Smith-Schuster, who emerged as a adequate top wide receiver a couple years ago and continued that play last year. Now, the losses for the Steelers last year came, well, they had the one tie against Cleveland, and then they lost to Baltimore. So they were 4-1-1 in division. I think the Cleveland tie, I'm going to make that a loss this year. Maybe they beat them in the other game. I think Baltimore could be a split situation this year. Put some pressure on them beating the Bengals. I think that might be a split. I'm going to say 3 wins in division for Pittsburgh this year. I think the division will be a lot more harder than it has been in years past for the Steelers. They lost all 4 games against the AFC West last year, and then they lost to the New Orleans Saints last year in non-conference. So this year, they play the AFC East. They're not going to lose all 4 games out of conference. They play at New England in a very tough outing in the first game of the season on Sunday night. They get Miami at home mid-season, and then they play Buffalo and then at New York in back-to-back weeks in late December. They have historically played bad at New York, by the way, so keep that in mind. I think that this is a 2-win situation. So I got them at 5, sitting at 5 right now. And now we go out of conference. San Francisco, at San Francisco early. Seattle at home early. Then they have midseason, they have the Rams. They come to Hines. Then at Arizona. I can see them pull 3 out of that. So that puts you at 8. Now you're sitting at 8 wins with interconference games being a deciding factor in regards to how many wins they'd probably get to. They are at the Chargers on Sunday night in October. The Chargers beat them last year at home. Keep that in mind. And then they play the Colts at home in early November. I really like the Colts team, as I've mentioned. I can't see if I reach, maybe they're at 9. I could probably see them more at 8. I'm going to pick them at 8. So I'd have to go under in regards to their win total, which is at 9 if I was picking. So in recap, I like Cincinnati under 6. I like Pittsburgh under 9. I like Baltimore under 8.5. And I like Cleveland over 9. And I like Cleveland to win the division. As much as I hate picking bandwagon teams, and the Cleveland is a bandwagon team, if you think about it and you lay it out and you lay out the facts, Cleveland should win this division. Now, as far as wild cards are concerned, I don't think this division gets a wild card. I think these teams will hamper one another. I think Baltimore and Pittsburgh will hamper one another in regards to getting the 9 wins. And therefore, I think that will keep the AFC North from having 2 teams in the playoffs. So I think there'll only be one, and that one should be the Cleveland Browns. But anything can change, barring injuries or the whatnot in regards to where teams land. But I like the Browns to win the division and be over their expected win total of 9.5. And again, they're the only team that I picked to be over. So that was my predictions on the AFC North as part of Game Day Cube. Again, you can find me as well on the Game Day Cube Sports Experience. We will do our next episode, we will do the AFC East. So please subscribe to this new podcast, the Game Day Cube NFL Show. We're going to do a lot of cool things this year in regards to the NFL, a lot of more talk in regards to the NFL, and talking about lines, fantasy, and the whatnot. Again, AFC East will be the next episode, so please subscribe to this new podcast. I am Isaac E., and I'm signing off.